And that's what you're doing. You're facilitating for them to get a picture of the movement towards the formation of a background and I don't know, maybe a better stepping stone for ground for yoga therapy.
Thank you for saying that. And I put on the recording button because I realized that as we start, the true nature of the earth is speaking so loudly to us now during our time of this activation through the corona emergence. And what occurs to me, because I'm listening so deeply through practices for many, many decades, long family tradition I come from, I won't go there now, but long tradition. And what I love about what you said is that this cultivation practice that each of us has sustained before this crisis, now in our moment,
yes,
has a new opportunity to share a new voice, and that the expansion of our own internal reflection practice and process through self-sheltering has enabled a release of so much old material that no longer serves, and that we now welcome this new time with open heart and open mind, and hopefully with a will that's ready for a co-evolution of sorts. So, and so that's basically the design of the book, that it might seed interest from others who've also continuously balanced, you know, these forces, right?
We tend to speak about how things are due to changes, and that we should adapt. In yoga, we always talk about don't get so attached to stuff. Everything is transitory, like in Buddhism. But I believe that sometimes some people don't actually live it in the true sense. And this period that we are passing through now is forcing us to adapt, is forcing us to let go, is forcing us to develop a different way of reaching people. Because we, as therapists or as yoga teachers, we need to get in touch with people. That's how we practice our profession. Yeah, we exert our profession through the contact with people. But now the contact with people is like this, what we're doing now.
I know. Yeah, go ahead. So I was just saying contact. So I want to make contact formally with the universe now so that we can settle into the questions. Is that okay with you?
Fantastic. Let's
do okay. It. So letting yourself get comfortable and finding this connection in this moment, your special spot on the earth, Daniela, and welcoming these amazing energies, so many different forces moving around, so big, so small, all at once. And just allow yourself to feel the ground and then the space around you. Love hearing the birds and then listening inside. And welcoming all of your teachers, all of the guides and angels. This abandonment to divine spirituality that it seems that many of us have decided to say yes to, even though we stumble and bumble. And then just sensing in above and below and all around. And offering any of your own words right here, right now, Daniela, so we make shared space.
Okay. One thing I really like to pay attention to when getting in touch with this inner space is to pay attention to the breath flow, which breaks boundaries of the inner space with the outer space, and actually making us getting the idea that there's no inside and there's no outside. There's no difference between me, you, or somebody, or anybody who may be around. It doesn't matter if he's black or white or fat or strong or thin or old or young or an engineer or a yoga teacher or a prisoner. Air goes inside everybody. Air doesn't choose hearts. Air doesn't choose intentions. Air doesn't choose formations. Air doesn't choose if you're gay, if you're hetero, or anybody, anything else. There's no difference between people. There's no difference between beings. We're all here. We all share the same air, the same earth. We may have a same, we may have a mission, or we may not, but if we share an idea of getting together, we have to respect differences and equalities and finish with expectations. Expectations lead normally to deception. And if we have none, even the yoga practice gets better. Even social contact gets a better flow, and we find some harmony. That's it. Thank you.
So the prototyping model from the Presencing Institute is in the form of a star. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like just to share those 5 points of the star, which the questions follow.
Okay.
So resting in our shared space and now listening to the way one of my teachers who created this has, through his interview process, has come up with these core principles and practices of how the future shows up first in our feelings. You so beautifully wrapped us in the sense of connection there. And that our work here, while paying attention to the quality and energy of the intention of the future, mm-hmm. right? That's landing now on the planet, it feels like to many of us, that we remember that as we create together the field of possibility, I like to call it the field of potential, mm-hmm. that we're working to crystallize our vision and intentions, that as we listen to the universe as a helpful place, mm-hmm. that we then can link the intelligences of the head, the heart, and what we call in presencing the will. That's more of a Rudolf Steiner word, because that's what many of this comes from. And that as that begins to land, that core teams, others, begin to shape around us, people. Mm-hmm. And that places and spaces begin to also form. We call them landing strips of the future, where we can iterate, where we can learn by doing, where we do our experimentations, where we make our mistakes. And that this making of mistakes and learning together, generating feedback and shaping new ideas together, is the way that this alignment to the core, both to Earth core, our own personal body core, but then this emerging core that we still haven't yet seen, I would suggest, in our time, so that they may begin to find some way of co-evolving, co-initiating something that we might not yet be able to see, feel, or sense. And so that's the nature of this expanded energetic field that we anchor in a variety of listening practices. And so we can talk about the what it is, or the how we feel, or how others feel about what it is. But as we land more, like from our yogic traditions, into this chitta, or the Buddhist, the ancient Theravadan traditions that comes from the ancient yogis and the Jain and Shaivism, that there's this other quality that begins to be available. You spoke to it around the contact, right? And that from that place, there's this inquiry around collective creativity, where there's a generative field that begins to fan out. And of course, we use the breath practices, those vertical awareness practices, but now we move more into this horizontal space as personal bodies doing our things. But then the collective body is what I am really anchoring in my listening, that actually begins to become more visible for us to research, to practice, to experiment. And that's this quality of emerging leadership that is the nexus or the yantra of my inquiry, that as we move away from our ego consciousness, that this earth space, this eco, this generative space begins to emerge. And then we create action from there, and that others begin to learn how that works by this learning, by doing, by iterating, making mistakes, trying, moving around through lifetimes, most likely. So, and then I anchored it really more in the intelligence of the heart, you know, this Bharata Yaka Upanishad, but I haven't actually been speaking that. I'm just letting that rest in our shared space around the deepest driving desire. Cause I still understand it as not yet fully formed, and that we're still working in elementals, you know, most basically. So that's my time of reflection today. So that as you now land in your embodied presence, to reflect on how your story moves through that quality and that enactment, this first question is truly about the divine spark. And the question is, how did your inspiration for your project or for your commitment to a yogic life, how did it arise? Can you please remember, again, thinking for our readers, how did it begin? What did you think? What did you feel? And can you see, feel, or sense where it came from so that it came to you?
I think that in just two words, I can define it, and then I can elaborate on it. It came from my mother. You know, she was a very, very interesting woman. She's passed away now since 2005. And she went early. She was 60. But yeah, very, very young. But she used to read a lot about psychology. She used to talk a lot with her friend in our home, and I used to pay attention. I liked to listen to them speaking and talking about stuff of life and existential subjects were always around them. And then when I entered my, when I got to the university in the physical education bachelor degree here in Brazil, it is in the university level developed. I had taken part before of a group that got together in the houses of the members to meditate. And this group was formed by some friends of my mother's. And they believed that, and they still do, the group's still going on. I'm not a part of it anymore. But they believed that you can build a better future by spreading good, energy. What you think molds your behavior. And there's something of a new age component in that. And there were some stuffs that I don't believe anymore that I did believe in those days. Specifically, some trans, how can I say, meditations that would put you in contact with higher beings in the universe that were supposed to be the CEOs of the universe. And then for me, it's all now just imagination. Okay. But I did get something really interesting from them that pointed me in the direction of yoga. We actually had some yoga practices in the community, and but for real, what really happened is that this side of the of my mind, which is prone to trying and getting people, getting actions to do better, to do well to people through action, also lives along with another very rational side in my brain, which doesn't accept any more things explained or not explained. Just do it like this because I learned from my teacher, or it is good, try. I've tried and it has worked with me. So I have a very inner nature of investigation. Yeah, I have to go deep in stuff. So when I went to the physical education course, one of my friends, while I started to be how do you say stagiario? Oh my God. When you go to a lab and you're a student and you're supervised.
Assistant, lab assistant, technician?
Yeah. Not technician. I was there to learn and to start learning to do research. Yeah.
Like an intern.
Yeah, intern. I got my internship there. And my other friend went to be an intern in the yoga class in the sports center at the same university, the University of São Paulo, where I work now. And we were studying different stuff. And she knew about this side I have in meditation. And she said, you should go and try a yoga class. And I said, no, but I'm stiff. I can't put my feet behind my ears. And she said, no, go there. You'll see it's nothing like that. And when I went, the first class, the teacher, Marcus, my yoga master, he said, okay, now try to stretch comfortably. And I said, what? I don't have to, that's that idea of no pain, no gain. No, forget about it. Go as long, as far as your comfort allows you to go, and then try to feel when you go back that the stretched area is more comfortable than before. If you don't feel it, it's not in the yoga path. And I said, oh, I'm beginning to like it. And he gave many references of research during his class. And I said, I'm liking it even more now. And then I just couldn't stop practicing. It saved me during my master's from having a heart attack. I'm really sure about it. And then I was so convinced about this good that yoga can do to people. And when I looked around, even my mother, who gave me all the inspiration to go for it, when I went to the yoga class, she said, there you go, to make your aum again, making jokes, you know? And I said, even you, mom? But she, and ultimately she became my student in one of my classes. You know, it was really nice. My worst student, but she was.
So there it is, this reciprocal principle, right? That you got everything. And yeah, then, yeah. Right? So that's very beautiful. Thank you so much. And these connections that I hear you having made, and also through your relationships to continue to explore, these next series of questions really relate about co-initiation, how through those additional connections did you further clarify your intention, I guess, to bring that deeper part of who you are, that's what I'm sensing, into something that would become a project that would include other people. Talk to us how connecting with others, clarifying your vision, brought you into something new.
Well, that investigative nature I have has led me not only to biochemistry internship, also to exercise physiology internship. And when I finished my undergrad, I definitely wanted to continue studying, but not only studying because I wanted to know more, because it was something of an ego quest. I wanted to help yoga getting more respected amongst society. Because when I finished my undergrad here, it was 1996. Imagine that when I started my master's degree, my project, I studied my master's degree in the School of Medicine here at the University of São Paulo, one of the most conservative schools, old-fashioned schools that we have here. And I'm from physical education. Medical people don't look up to us. We have to look up to them always, yeah? And then my tutor said, you can't put yoga you can't write yoga in your project. But you're going into therapy because we're going to the Faculty of Medicine. I said, oh, cool. But can I research yoga and not say it is yoga? She said, yeah, let's try and find if her way of her research line was beginning, but it was in hypertension. So if I could find something that in yoga that would help treat hypertension, she would guide me through it. Then Shavasana was the obvious choice. And I found many stuff on it. And I put together a project that was approved, but I couldn't put the name Shavasana and I couldn't put the name yoga on it. It should be only relaxation, you know? But then when I finished it, 2.5 years later, and I published it in a British Medical Journal. No, it was in the Journal of the American College of Sports Medicine. It's a really nice journal. well represented all over the world. So then my teacher began his master's degree, and I went to my PhD, and some friends that like the what you said, you if you follow your path, truly believing that you're doing it in your dharmic way, stuff will happen. And many people started doing investigations at the same time or in some separations in time. But now it's the same if you go to PubMed and you put a search for yoga with no date limit, you will have like 6,000 papers. But if you ask for it only the five closest years, you will have at least half of it. It's like an exponential curve. So in my PhD, I could say that, okay, we are going to study Bhastrika, pranayam from yoga in elderly people, you know? And we published in British Medical Journal Open, the open version, very nice new journal too. It was one of the first, it was the first year of the journal that in 2010. And then the second and third year, we saw their impact factor just raising up above 3. So it's really nice.
Wow, wow. Yeah. Well, those were very well-placed intentions and also wonderful connections. And so isn't it true, you know, the energy of the Dharma is so, so incontrovertible. It's a no-brainer. I say that with tongue in cheek, you know, no brain on the Dharma path, different energy. So thank you. I just want to sidestep and give you a little personal history. I was the consultant to Kripalu at the very beginning of the Institute for Extraordinary Living, even before Satpeer and their research agenda got there. I was there to help do the early team formation as they were finding their intention, their way of working as a collective for yoga in the world, FYI. And then going back to my childhood, I come out of a family of long-term spiritual practitioners, and my father was a very well-known global researcher in immunology, most particularly around the flavonoids, the naturally occurring substances in plants. Uh-huh. So I just want to shape our conversation so that we can make use of all that's available to us, okay?
Fantastic.
In this time of earth transformation. And you know, becoming like trees, hopefully. That's my personal dream. Anyway, this crystallizing and co-initiation. So now we come to the part of the interview where we're dancing with your personal investigatory nature and what that actually does to your nervous system. I'm just going to go there because that's what I'm sensing. Mm-hmm. And as that became clearer in the way that you communicated, through the journal publications, obviously through your relational capacity to get people to help you. Tell me and tell readers more clearly, if that's possible, or through a metaphor or analogy or another story, what is this around finding these landing strips? Because it seems like you're pretty good at that, that you found really good ways to seed your curious mind, your open heart, to help create a new opening for these yoga-based practices as a researcher, right? That's your main offer? Mm-hmm. So tell us more about that. You see what I'm trying to do? I'm trying to weave those personality things into your essential nature, mm-hmm. so that the intention as you matured actually got a little easier. It may not have, but I'm imagining.
I think I'm getting the idea. You know, once I was, I will probably do it with a story. I had a girlfriend who was very, very, very intelligent. And she wanted, because I don't know, she when you're in the health area, health related areas, you tend to think that you should, if you're good, you have to go to medical school. You have to become a doctor, at least here in Brazil, you know. And then she was really good. She was in the secondary school here, like when you finish high school, she was on top of her class. When she, on the prep courses, they did some tests and she was always the first or second of not her class, but all the preparation course school. And she wanted med. But when she got into the, we have a very big test here. I don't know the process there in New York or in the US, but those days we had only a test. And if you were better than 95%, you would have a chance to get into a good medical school. And she tried for 6 years on the road. And she failed all the six tries. And then she said, well, my second inner try would be pedagogy, would be going for teaching for kids. And she tried and she got in the first place. And she became a very well recognized and fantastically loved teacher with her master's, her PhD and everything. So sometimes we don't listen to our inner voice and we try to build a way to our self-development that it's not our dharmic path. But we're not listening. It's sometimes it may be connected to all these influences that parents do on the children's mind while it develops, but also friends and also the society. And sometimes when you just pay attention to things that are happening around you, you get those clues, you get those signs. You know, and stuff start to happen. All of a sudden, I never had dreamed about the possibility of going to India. And then when I decided I would go, I would make a plan to go to India in 5 years, in 5 months I was there. The universe just has rearranged for it to happen because it had to happen. And if we are open to it, but it should be taken with care, these words that I'm saying, because I'm not, there are those videos that were spread some years ago about the mystery and the force that lays between. And so it's not this. Like intuition or like just paying attention to what normally our elderly used to say, go for things that you really like and you will be good at it. Just choose what your heart says. And we have a potential to become, we have potentials to become anything we want in life. If I'm really, really determined now that I would everything and become a nuclear physicist in the next 15 years, if I don't die, I can do it. No?
You can. So, you know, I'm wanting to go back as you speak about this future, just to clarify for myself and for the readers, Why physical education as the pathway that entered you into this investigation? Where did that early body-centered interest lead? How did that portal open for you, that it was physical education that was the starting point for you? This, so let me frame why I say this, because if it's true that now on the planet, the time of embodiment is actually becoming a little bit more aware as a way to be. The Presencing Institute is certainly there. Yoga-based practices, we can see from its business development and the research development that you spoke about. But you made a personal choice about the study of the body. Tell our readers what that was like when you had many choices, I'm sure.
Yeah. I wanted to understand the functioning of the body, but I didn't actually, it's a kind of childish way of choosing, because I didn't want to kill animals during my studies.
Not so childish, very mature.
So if I had gone to medical school, I would have killed pigs, I would have killed dogs during surgery practicing, and I wouldn't really, it would be really sad for me, it would have been.
Okay.
Why not going to physical therapy? Yeah. Those days, in the beginning, I didn't want to work with suffering. I wanted to, I preferred the positive side of health. So I went to physical education. But as I've gone deeper in my studies, I started researching on how to make ill people better. And then it took me to therapy.
Okay, thank you. It was a missing piece for me. Mm-hmm. So as this more optimizing place in you, as your investigatory and optimizing place, right? I start to understand more clearly. Now I ask from these practices, what began to crystallize in you that gave you the forward momentum about the making sick people better? Tell us how that began to formulate your research questions, the teams around your samples, how that was as a researcher, so that readers might want to come into the field that you're beautifully sharing.
Thank you. Now that there's, it takes me back a little bit, almost 20 years ago, my yoga teacher started to do a social work with the inmates of Fundação Casa, the House Foundation, which is for kids, male and female, which are not over 21. They are the maximum age they can be inside this institution is 21. After that, they go to prison or they go to the street. Okay. And he started teaching yoga inside that institution. And I was one of the volunteers, along with many others. And this work still goes on. It's a really nice social work. But it was 20 years ago, so I'm 47 now. I was 27. I was almost the same age of the kids I was teaching. And I didn't feel so comfortable because I wanted to believe that I would do that, what I was doing would change their lives, but I couldn't really believe it. I was not so such a believer in the capacity that those boys would have to become good if they were really bad. Or I couldn't, you know? So it a little bit about myself, about my way of thinking then, because everybody should have the opportunity to try and not do the bad stuff that they did and try to change and everything. That's what we believe in as yoga searchers. Yeah. But back then I said, okay, this is not making me very, I'm not so well doing this. I prefer to try and do better for people in the biological health side of health, not in the sociological one. No, so I think that I will be more true trying to build a very nice body of knowledge for people to beat stress or to beat hypertension or to beat post-traumatic stress, depression, or something like that, then to say, oh, I'm going to do a social work and I'm so good. I'm a, you know, those yoga people that like to say, oh, I'm an ogre. I'm a yogurt, like Shrek practicing yoga, you know?
Hallelujah. I'm going to just say hallelujah to that. So we're winding down. I'm going to go a little over. Do you have the time? Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm really focusing on now in my interest is that as you have gotten very clear about this shift toward the biological change in the human body and those bodies who might not feel good, but who might regain or learn or restore, whatever action verb we want to use now, somehow I begin to get curious about your studies and what you are embodying as a researcher when you formulate the research questions from that very elemental biological place and space. Mm-hmm. And certainly we know from Sanskrit that it has a vibration. Yeah. And so I'm just wanting to hear a little bit of the music of Daniela in order to help others perhaps translate what they haven't yet thought about as something that they might translate into a research question. I'm imagining, Daniela, and I might be totally wrong here, that your curiosity around these deeper and more explicit biological functions, because you're an investigator, right?
Yeah.
Might have a thread back to some sutras or some special teachings that landed in you as a person who practices that informs your work in the world now. And so the blend here is, how does your essence as an esoteric practitioner translate into your investigator as a yoga researcher? Can you help us understand that bridge?
Yeah, I think so. If you get the second sutra of Patanjali, Yogaschitta Vritti Nirodha, people like to believe it's the first one, but it's actually the second. Well, the first one really helps too. Yeah. Atta Yoga Anusasanam means yoga is a self-discipline. And it's now. So if you're not willing to change, don't start. But if you start, it's for citta vritti nirodha. It's for easing the mind. It's for helping us getting into a place in which our ego goes back. and serves us, not as individuals, but as a we, coming from me to we, as you so fantastically point. So, and this Chittavritti, Nirodhas, will give way to, will sometimes my English just doesn't let me speak what I want to. They will, our vrittis will surrender to our highest wills if we are gentle to ourselves. If we get to that oceanic sensation that Freud has described this during the asanas. So my quest that comes together, that my investigative nature meets my practical yoga practice when I try to, through my papers and my investigations, I try to point out for people that the biggest inner changes, the biggest biological changes that yoga may offer will be conquest, will happen only if you practice yoga in a very subtle way, in a very easygoing way. If you don't confuse it with exercise. Exercise is fantastic, and I know it. I've studied it a lot. But exercise is exercise, and asana is asana. Asana isn't the Indian exercise. It can't be called exercise. Exercise, Dr. Garottiji used to define and differentiate exercise from asana in a very fantastic and easy way. Exercise, the more you practice, the more you get tired. You can. No, the more you practice, the more you rest.
I love it. I love it.
You shouldn't practice more than 45 or 50 minutes of asanas, because if you do, you get lazy. And asanas are meant to prepare you for pranayama, which are meant to prepare you for meditation. And if you practice asana as asana, it is already a kind of meditation. And my second latest paper, it was a really nice one on frontiers in aging neurosciences. We've proved that people who practice yoga in a traditional way and they are over 60 years old and they practice for at least 8 years, at least twice a week. It's not so much practice, 1 hour per day per practice. They get the connectivity of the frontal part of the brain with the back part of the brain increased and preserved. But it has to be practiced in a traditional way, asana as asana, not exercise. Because people were matched to the controls, to the control group, which had the same amount of physical exercise as the yoga group, but the yoga groups had the plus yoga.
So okay.
If you practice water aerobics, and I would take, and you don't practice yoga. I practice water aerobics for 5 years. I've looked for and put somebody in the yoga group that had practiced water aerobics for 5 years and yoga. So physical component is just put aside. It is controlled. It is not exercise that leads to it. It's the self-attention, the awareness component of yoga that brings up these differences.
Okay, so there it is. So tell our readers the importance of the link between the back part of the brain and the front part of the brain and how that distinction is important.
Okay, as we age, normally our brain shrinks. it is, you just can't avoid it, but you can make it happen slower, okay? The cortex is where all this the main connections of the brain happen, and it is responsible for maintaining our consciousness. And if this part of the brain talks to this part, which talks to this part, we call it a brain connectivity. And there are different networks that come into play in different tasks that we are doing. One of them is called the default mode network. The default mode network is a part of the brain that is formed by many parts, and that's the one I investigated in that paper. It becomes very active when we are resting and not engaged into attentional tasks. But we have to be able to disengage it when the attentional task comes. So it's like the car that is stopped, but the engine is working. And when the car has to move, you just gotta press the pedal and the brakes must go off and then it will go. As we age, we lose the ability of disengaging the brake, disengaging the default mode network. To keep the parts of the default mode network well connected is an indication that we may have preserved the ability to disengage it when we need. Normally, when I'm teaching yoga for the elderly, I started teaching yoga for, I had 150 elderly students all put together in three classes of 50. And sometimes when you give the instruction, the oral instruction, and you see that one is going to one side and the other is going to the other side, one is putting the leg correctly and the other, and you correct orally, normally the elderly have a greater difficulty to get to know that you are talking to them, because they are engaged in the default mode network and they don't disengage. It's of cognitive plasticity that the elderly have.
I hear you.
You know?
However, you know, this relates to attention, that they then might have more availability to focus and to pay attention and have more choice. That's what I'm imagining from more of a social engagement perspective. I don't know if it links at all.
Yeah, but there is something called mind wandering. Do you know this concept?
I do.
It's very, it's not a positive concept. Yeah. When people are depressed, they used to tend to mind wander much more than people who are not depressed.
Right.
People who don't disengage the default motor network so much, they tend to be mind wandering. And this mind wandering is not necessarily connected to positive thinking. You're not thinking, if your mind wandering normally, okay, normally, people are mind wandering about situations in which they are involved and it is a negative memory or a negative relationship. And they are just like falling again in that vicious circle, you know? And people who are older probably have had time to have more negative experiences in life as well as good experiences. Yeah, of course. But if the person is already mildly depressed, mind wander will get them worsening in that scenario. And this attention that yoga brings you from the cortical, the motor cortex here into the breathing movements, for instance, will bring you to space and time, which are now, which is Atta Yoga Anusasanam, which will give you this, if the teacher brings the students to that consciousness. What is wrong between one and the second breath you have? Nothing. It's the power of now. Yeah. You, if you pay attention that you're healthy in between two breaths, nothing can harm you. And you start shifting this mind wandering into some positive.
And then it expands. I would love to have another conversation about another matter. It's time to finish this conversation. And what I'd like to plant as a potential is a conversation I've been exploring with Marlissa because of her interest in Stephen Porges' work. And this has to do with how embodied presence practices that really come out of Maturana and Varela's work out of Chile, which are the basic structural research of the Presencing Institute and the many embodied practices that we're teaching in social systems change practices, not individual biological systems like you are. Mm-hmm. And my mind is the kind of mind that wants to see a bridging, right? You heard that through the questions. It's the same thing we do it from our internal biological change practices. We call this just focused attention. I mean, there's so many different words and the being in the now. But what if this social engagement through the polyvagal theory might also have a different quality when we work with other groups across dimensions of reality? The only person who's really talking about that now is the Rupert Sheldrake. You know his work? Mm-hmm. Rupert Sheldrake, morphic fields, resonance. It's more in the psi research, you know, it's non-dual practices within individuals for non-local awareness. And he's got a very different way of looking at it, but it's biologically based, Daniela. And so if it's true that our nervous systems during this COVID time are extending into another field of awareness, that's why I got very interested in this, you know, these new networks to appreciate something within a refined moment in time, the way the yoga practice does. What's in the way of extending that by analogy into other social systems? I mean, I don't know enough in order to really create a question about this. It's simply a curiosity because I work globally with many people in many different groups, and they're sensing, right, their internal qualities of understanding from the body, not mm-hmm. through thinking, is shifting dramatically. And we don't have yet a way of understanding this except through a resistance type of thinking, you know, where nobody has captured it. It's all just blah, blah, as far as I'm concerned, you know. So I just offer that. I'd like to have a moment of meditation on that, because your investigatory mind and the detailed quality of your research, and Marlissa is very interested in this too, I believe that the yoga world and yoga therapy, besides the personal benefit, right? This is the whole moving from me to we, that can establish as a concrete way of community healing, community innovation, community development in our time of corona. And that if people understand the medicine of the biochemical changes in personal body, right? This is the alchemy of it all. And it's from the esoteric teachings, that we may not yet know the impact of it in social systems. and how to begin to ask questions about that. Certainly at IAYT, it's not the focus of the interest. They still just want to get it into medical fields, you know.
I'll give you one piece of information. Okay. Started when this lockdown began, he started doing some lives in Instagram just to, because he had at least, I don't know, 1,000 students, new students per semester. And they were, he didn't want to let them feeling. So he and his son and daughter, which are yoga teachers too, they were confined in the, they are confined in the same house. So once a day they gave lives. And they started doing that also to feel they were doing something.
Right.
Yeah? And then the feedback was so huge that the last live he did was with a Buddhist monk here, Monja Coen, who is fantastic. They had online during Instagram, while they were live, almost 4,000 people.
Wow. Okay. What is his name?
Marcos Rojo. He's a very nice person for you to talk to.
How do you spell his last name?
Marcos is M-A-R-C-O-S. And Rojo is R-O-J-O.
Okay. It's social media. Here we are. Social media. I can't believe it. I know. It's crazy. I know.
People getting benefited from it. You know?
That's it.
And now I think there's no coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No coming back. So this is just the beginning. So it has to do with inspiration, though, somehow. And that quality of just, we call it acting in an instant. You know, when that aha happens in the synapse. Uh-huh. And what we create are these opportunities through the prototyping process for people to have cultivated significant amounts of personal awareness. We're on a journey now. I'll send you the link, because it's a large global community that's actually following this U process. And we have created some very interesting ways to invite activation of not only the personal body awareness, but also we call it the awareness of the social field. Your guy here, Marcos, was actually responding to social field, like we were talking today. So many examples coming up over the world. But from a scientific perspective, we don't have a sufficient research platform. And so that's a curiosity of mine.
As a self-investigator, I noticed that it may look paradoxical, but when you focus on the eye in this positive way that yoga tells us to try and focus and get better in the eye, you get to the we. Yeah.
We know this around vibratory. Yes. Excuse me. Absolutely. It doesn't stop, does it? No, it's, and that's the intention. That's why living in community and doing practices together. But if our community is now through this kind of stuff or this, you know, we have to continue. Yeah. Anyway, I must finish now. I am going to bow and just say what a delight it was to be with you today.
And fantastic for me too, Ellie. I didn't have any kind of expectations, and I think it's good, but yeah, it's better than I could ever imagine.
So next steps will be, I don't have to pass the manuscript in until end of summer. So they will get in touch, Singing Dragon, lovely people. They will ask for bio, how you want to be presented, you know, blah, blah, all that stuff. No problem. If there's anything else, I will just consider you someone I could reach out to for the purposes of the book. And ditto. Have a blessed rest of your day.
Thank you. You too, Ellie. And if you want to talk, if you want to make like a Zoom with me, Marlisa, and talk about this other subject, it will be really my pleasure to get
involved. Well, Marlisa is open to it. You know, she's just landing with her new book and getting all that, you know, she's so excited. It's so wonderful. I would want to get Marlisa and Stephen together with you and some others from Presencing Institute, simply to explore collective eye research. That would be, I don't know enough, but wouldn't it be interesting to start a conversation? And that's what I'm willing to create. Okay. It's okay. Just, a, you know. Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you.